You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Neil.
And I'm Ken.
And we are from the Triviality Podcast, a pub trivia-style game show where a lack of seriousness meets a little bit of knowledge.
Join us each week for an hour-long game of general knowledge trivia featuring special guests from around the world, plus tons of extra themed episodes.
If you want to improve your trivia game,
or you just want to scream at us in your car when we get easy questions wrong,
then we're the show for you. Find Triviality on all your favorite podcast apps.
But you know that because you're already listening to a podcast.
Welcome to our couch.
Take a seat.
It's time for therapy.
Movie therapy.
I'm Kristen Meinzer, culture critic and co-author of How to Be Fine.
And I'm Rafer Guzman, film critic for Newsday. In each episode of Movie Therapy, we offer up questionable advice and solid TV and movie recommendations for whatever ails you.
As usual, our disclaimer, Rafer, you and I are not real therapists,
no.
But we are real TV and movie critics.
Yes.
And one more disclaimer, Rafer just moved into a new apartment, which is very echoey.
I'm going to tell you, it's a pretty echoey room.
Yes. Yes. So Rafer may sound a little bit different this week, next week, the next few weeks, we'll see. But with those disclaimers out of the way, Rafer, shall we get to this week's mailbag?
Yes. Calling our first patient, Zen aspiring Emily. I'm going to say that again. Zen aspiring Emily. How do you like that, Kristen? We'll see why she calls herself Zen aspiring in just a minute. But here's what she says. Dear Rafer and Kristen, I need your help. I'm about to go on vacation with my family to visit my in-laws. It seems even when I try to bring my best self, I always have tension with my sister-in-law. She can be a lot of fun, but she's also controlling. She gets jealous when we spend time with other members of the family. How can I relax and enjoy my vacation and not be on edge? How can I learn to accept my sister-in-law for who she is and just go with the flow? Do you have any movie or TV recommendations where a protagonist achieves zen-like tranquility and learns to accept a family member with a sometimes difficult personality? Thank you in advance.
Oh, Zen aspiring Emily, that. Oh, I'm sure a lot of people listening right now are saying, yep, that sounds like my family too.
Yep.
I have that one member of the family, that one in-law, that one person who every time we get together, I just think, ugh. You might be more trouble than you're worth, right? Or maybe not you, Rafer. I'm sure your family's perfect.
Me, not me. Both my family. Every family is perfect in my situation, yes. No, listen, this goes not just for in-laws. This goes for anybody. This goes for, you know, your own relatives. This goes for people you might be friends with. I mean, this could go for just about anyone in your life, a coworker, all kinds of different things. Yeah, it's very difficult. I personally am going to say, I don't know. I have my suspicions about Zen. I'm not sure if I'm I'm not sure if I'm down with Zen 100%.
Ooh, do tell, Rafer. Do tell.
I don't know. This whole idea of rising above. Now, my mom, who is a Buddhist, I know that's maybe slightly different than Zen. I'm not sure what the differences there are on some of that stuff. I get them a little confused. But my mom, who is a Buddhist, you know, she and I have had this discussion before where I kind of feel like, you know, rising above so that nothing bothers you and you're not really, you know, everything just kind of flows past you and you're not ruffled by that. I kind of feel like that sounds to me like death. What you're describing there is a state of death. I'm talking about life. I kind of want things to affect me. I kind of want to be bothered by things. I want to care. I don't know if rising above, I don't know. Anyway, my mom and I have had this discussion before. But how do you feel about this, about the zen-like tranquility option, Kristen?
Well, As you know, Rafer, I generally do try to, you know, look on the bright side and be jolly and assume the best in others. But even I have a breaking point where I'm like, I don't need to be zen here. I just need to go on a walk.
Right.
I'll see you guys in a half hour. You know, it can be as simple as that.
Yeah.
Or maybe you can try saying, hey, you guys, why don't you guys continue this conversation? I'm going to go inside the house and do some dishes right now. Whatever it is. And I'm definitely that I mean, my husband, Dean, and I have talked about this, that we are frequently the dishes people at parties where we're just like, see you later.
Oh.
Sometimes you just need to do the dishes.
I love it. I like that. Next time I'm at your house, if one of you offers to do the dishes, I'm going to know that I said something wrong. I blew it. I blew it if that's the case.
Well, it's a low conflict way to get out of a conflict.
Yeah.
That being said, if your sister-in-law is truly being unkind or possessive, I think you can try to address it diplomatically. You don't have to give her a lecture. You don't have to make her feel bad or put her down. You can just say, I love everybody here and I want to see everybody. Or there's enough of me to go around or something along those lines.
I think that's true.
Or even better, have your spouse address the matter because this is your spouse's family. Right?
That's a good point too. Look, you're not wrong. That's true. That's true.
Yeah. So yeah, long story short, I agree with you, Rafer. Maybe we don't always need to be zen here. Sometimes it's okay to let yourself be mad and step away a little bit. And I may as well just say right now, that's kind of why I am prescribing the movie I'm prescribing.
Okay, let's hear it.
It is called Psycho Sister-in-Law. From Lifetime Television 2020.
Oh.
Currently streaming on Amazon Prime and elsewhere.
Well, I can see whose side you're on.
Supposedly, it's even inspired by a true story.
Oh, does it say that at the beginning? Inspired by a true story. I always love that. This happened to me.
So here's the story of Psycho Sister-in-Law. After the death of their father, a half-sister who's kind of been forgotten and left by the wayside comes back into the picture, is reunited with her brother, and her brother has a now pregnant wife. And are they all going to get along? What's going to happen with the inheritance? Why was this long-lost half-sister gone for so long? And is she really as sweet as she seems? Here's a clip.
Hey, Nick, who is that?
I think that's my sister. Zara. Hey, it's me, Nick.
Nick, hi, I am... Oh, I'm so sorry. How are you holding up?
I'm fine. And this is my wife, Haley.
Hi. Haley, hi. It's nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Oh, and you're expecting. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you for coming today. I have to admit, Nick has mentioned you over the years, but I was starting to wonder if you actually existed.
Yeah, I was sort of starting to wonder if this side of the family knew I existed, too.
I think he would have appreciated you coming.
Yeah, I just wish I hadn't been late.
Oh, well, we're actually having a little memorial back at the house if you want to join us.
I think I'd really like that. Thank you.
Yeah, come.
Well, I'm just going to say something about the title, and I'm going to call that a spoiler alert. It is called Psycho Sister-in-Law.
Hold on. Did I say which sister-in-law is the psycho, though?
Oh, hey, you're right.
Could it be the pregnant one? Could it be, and not the half-sister?
Good point.
We don't know. I will, however, tell you this. Lydia Hurst stars as the half-sister who comes back into the picture. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Hurst family, her mother, Patty Hurst.
Oh, that Hurst.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
A long-storied history, the Hurst family.
Indeed.
Granddad or great-granddad, the newspaper giant and so on. Anywho.
Citizen Kane.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. And I got to say, Lydia Hurst is delightful in this movie. She is so good at kind of being a sweetheart when she needs to be and maybe not in other situations being so sweet. And I think maybe when you watch this movie, Zen Seeking Emily or Zen Aspiring Emily, I think maybe you'll watch this movie and maybe you'll just let yourself be a little irritated. Maybe you'll let yourself be a little angry. Maybe you'll let yourself think the worst possible thoughts about your sister-in-law. And then maybe after letting all those feelings happen, maybe you will have a little bit more zen in your life.
So this is catharsis is what you're prescribing here. Something cathartic.
Exactly, Rafer.
Okay.
Exactly. That's why I'm prescribing it. And also, I think you'll just have a good time watching it. You'll just be laughing and rolling your eyes and really thinking, is that comb a weapon? Yes, that comb is a weapon. And so is that bedazzled belt.
No, come on. It gets to weaponized combs?
Oh, it sure does. Stay away from the bedazzled belt. Stay away from that. Don't go into the pool house.
Well, that could be a lot of movies.
Why are you going into the pool house? Yes, that's true.
I love it. Okay. All right. Psycho sister-in-law. That's hilarious.
But Rafer, I'm curious about what you're going to prescribe. You're a very thoughtful person. You're a very kind-hearted person. You are a little bit more sophisticated with your movie tastes usually. I am assuming you're going to come up with something a little bit more highbrow than Psycho Sister-in-Law here for Emily.
Well, you know, and I don't know if I tend to be more sophisticated. I maybe tend to be a little more serious at times. And I did go a little bit on the serious side with this pick. I chose Manchester by the Sea. Do you remember this movie?
I do. It was the movie where nothing good happens.
I guess that's kind of true.
Oh, that's a lot of movies you like, though, Rafer.
That's true. Okay, I don't know if I would call it that, if I would say nothing good happens. Let me give you the story. It's the movie that had Casey Affleck. This was a big, big, big role for him. He plays a guy named Lee. He lives in Quincy, Massachusetts. I have a little connection to Quincy. My wife used to work at the Quincy Patriot Ledger. Mm. And I have a sister-in-law and a niece-in-law? No, if it's my sister-in-law's daughter, is that just my niece? What do I call that?
That's your niece.
Just niece, just plain old niece. Okay, so I have a sister-in-law and
yep,
a niece.
She's your niece.
They both live in Quincy, so we see them fairly often. We spend some time in Quincy. Anyway, Lee is a janitor in an apartment building in Quincy, and he's a very asocial type. He doesn't really talk to anyone, doesn't like it when people talk to him. Sometimes the women in the building try to hit on him. He doesn't like that either. He just wants to fix your goddamn toilet and get out. None of this hitting on me crap. He just wants to keep to himself. Well, Lee has a brother, or at least had a brother, in Manchester by the Sea, not too far away. Lee's brother dies rather suddenly, young, of a heart attack. And he leaves behind a teenage boy, Patrick, played by Lucas Hedges. And Patrick, now that his father is gone, kind of has no one. Yes, he's got a mom, but she's not a real possibility. She's a former drug addict. Now she's born again. She's kind of off in her own world. She's got sort of a controlling boyfriend. She just doesn't seem like a great option. He's really just got Lee, this guy who he doesn't really know, this antisocial janitor from a few towns away. And so Patrick is thinking that, you know, maybe Lee will take him in and he'll have a family again. Well, Lee had a family once. They used to live in Manchester by the Sea. That family is gone. It did not end well. And Lee just isn't sure if he can move back to this town and start a new family. And here's a clip.
Hello, this is Lee.
What happened to my brother?
So that's the Lee Chandler.
I don't understand.
Which part are you having trouble with?
Well, I can't be his guardian.
Well, your brother provided for your nephew's upkeep. I think the idea was that you would relocate.
Relocate to where?
Well, if you look, it was my impression that you'd spent a lot of time here.
Hi, sweetheart. I'm just a backup.
Lee, nobody can appreciate what you've been through. And if you really feel you can't take this on, you know, that's your right.
Ugh. Like I said, Rafer, nothing good happens in this movie. Listen to that sadness. Listen to that heaviness. Oh, my God.
I don't know if I'd call this movie heavy. It's not like some of the other movies that I've prescribed, which are you know, kind of heavy. I think it's kind of a deep movie, though. The guy who, the writer-director is Kenneth Lonergan. He's a great screenwriter. He did Gangs of New York for Martin Scorsese. He did You Can Count on Me, a movie that we've prescribed here on this podcast. Mm-hmm. He won the best screenplay for this. Casey Affleck won best actor. Lucas Hedges was nominated. Movie got nominated for best picture. It's a great acting job from Affleck. There's a scene in this movie where he is drunk and he's picking a fight at a bar. And it's the best example of that, which I think we've all seen in movies where, you know, guys get drunk and then things get out of control. And those scenes are always kind of a little, they feel a little forced, a little contrived. They're never that believable. This was the most realistic, cringe-inducing guy getting drunk in a bar scene that I've ever seen. I think it's the reason Affleck got the Oscar. But the reason I'm recommending this is because Patrick, this teenager, wants Lee to be a father figure, and Lee is trying. And in some ways, you could say there's no real reason. There's no physical sort of obstacle in anything that's really stopping him. But sometimes it's just not that simple. And sometimes people just kind of can't be who you want them to be, even when they ought to be. And you just kind of have to accept them for who they are, or accept that that's the case. And that's about that whatever these people are good for, that's about all they're good for. And you just got to try to do your best and take them for what they are. And that's kind of the end of it. So I know that's not a Zen lesson necessarily, but I think that's just kind of how people are, I think. And that's a movie that I think this lesson teaches very well.
I think that is a very Zen lesson, Rafer.
I mean, maybe it is. Maybe you're right.
Yeah. I think, isn't that what being Zen is? It's like the only thing I can really change is myself.
Yeah. Acceptance. Okay.
And everything else, it's out of my hands, right? It's about accepting things.
I don't want to be Zen though. God damn it.
So maybe, Rafer, you're way more Zen than I am. I'm like, no, have the whole fantasy with the bedazzled belt and the comb as a weapon. Have that fantasy. Do the whole thing. And then maybe watch Rafer's movie, right?
Well, we've given Zen aspiring Emily two very, very different choices. She's got two good options to choose. From me, Manchester by the Sea. And from you, Kristen, Psycho sister-in-law.
Yeah, maybe the title does give it away. Anywho, we're going to take a quick break. But before we do you need some movie therapy? Visit our website, raferandkristen.com, and fill out the contact form there. You don't have to use your real name. And while you're there, check out our prescription pad where we list every movie and TV show we've ever prescribed on the show.
When we're back, we will tackle a letter from someone who is newly retired. We're back with our second letter of the week. Kristen, what does our second patient have to say?
Our second patient is named Amy, and Amy writes, "Dear Rafer and Kristen, I love your podcast, and Kristen, I've been a fan since when Meghan met Harry." Oh my gosh, that's years ago. Thank you so much, Amy. "I'm so glad I have found this podcast as well. I am seeking some advice because my husband and I have just retired, and we're facing the what next question. We're also adjusting to being around each other 24/7 after 30 years of marriage, two kids, and two jobs. We are privileged enough, and I'm using that term on purpose, to not need to work. But that creates even more options for ways to fill our days. Too many choices is how we're feeling right now. Any movie suggestions to help us through this moment? Thanks so much."
Well, it sounds like a good spot to be in, frankly.
Yeah, absolutely. The world is your oyster, Amy.
Yeah. No more kids, no more jobs. Good grief. That sounds like, I don't know, sounds like being single again. Sounds like being I don't know. That sounds great. I guess I understand this idea of too many choices. You do have that phenomenon they call option fatigue, right? Where you kind of have so many choices, you don't know what to do. And then you pick one and you're not satisfied because what about all those other things you could have picked and blah, blah. But I don't know. Me, I would take too many choices over too few any day. What about you, Kristen?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And the great thing is the point in your life you're at now, Amy, you can try a choice. And then if you don't like it for very long, try something else. It sounds like you're in a financial position and that you have enough time on your hands that if something doesn't work out, that's fine. I tried line dancing for 2 weeks. It wasn't my jam. Okay, now I'm going to go and get a Winnebago and travel across the country for a month. Nope, I don't like the Winnebago life. Now I can try this. I mean, there are all the options out there and all the time to do it. And you're going to have a great time. You're going to have such a good time trying new things, meeting new people, and, you know, letting it go if it's not a fit. You know, you don't have to do it forever if it's not a fit.
Did you try line dancing, Kristen?
Oh, no, but it's on my list. I would like to at some point. There are all sorts of things I want to do when I'm retired. I mean, I think I've talked with you about this off mic, Rafer, but I dream of living in a retirement community like my mother-in-law. She lives in this retirement village in New Zealand where there are all these houses and all these apartments, and then there's a lodge, and the lodge has... the swimming pool. The lodge has the library. The lodge has the hair salon and activities every day like mahjong. And they have a Friday night happy hour, but you're only allowed to have two drinks because some people try to abuse the privilege. And I'm like, yeah, I would be the one abusing the privilege on Friday nights there. And
so
they have
funny.
Lawn bowls. They have all the activities. I'm like, yeah, that's what I want to do. They have a bus that goes into Christchurch several times a day, so you never have to drive if you don't want to. I'm like, yeah, this seems like a really good life to me.
Kristen, I'll visit you, but I'm not going any place that cuts me off after two drinks.
That's the free drinks. After the free drinks, you have to pay.
Oh, I see. Oh, Kristen, you're going to have a great time. You're going to have a great time.
I'm looking forward to it.
That's a great attitude. All right. So, Kristen, what are you going to recommend for Amy with too many choices?
Well, I feel like you should start since we were just talking about life in a retirement community.
Okay. Well, that's a good point. I can start. I mean, this is going to be a little bit of an obvious choice, but, you know, part of the problem is we've recommended a lot of films involving retirement on this podcast. I was kind of surprised to go back and realize that we've never prescribed the best exotic Marigold Hotel, the kind of classic retirement movie in a way, right?
Yeah, and the ultimate retirement village, right? I mean,
right.
You're in beautiful India. Dev Patel is there looking adorable. You're with every like Oscar nominee of all time. You're
right,
eating great
exactly.
food. You're wearing great clothes. You're in a great setting. Like, who wouldn't want to retire in that village, right?
Totally, totally. Yeah. That's basically it. Kristen has just described the story, a quote unquote story of this movie. there really isn't one, or rather, I guess you could say there's a lot of little stories. But yeah, that's it. It's about a bunch of senior citizens from England, from different parts of England. They don't really know each other when they come together, and they come to stay at this retirement home in India called the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. Yes, run by Dev Patel, being very Dev Patel. And so basically what you've got here, like Kristen was saying, is a cast of characters played by really like the best actors in the world. Here's a brief rundown. First of all, Judi Dench, not playing a queen for once. She's a widower. She's a little short on cash. And so that's why she decides to come and stay in India, where you get a little more bang for your buck, or pound, excuse me. And then you've got Bill Nighy and Penelope Wilton, who many people might not be familiar with, but she's a great actress. They play the Ainsleys. They just sank a bunch of money into their daughter's startup, and that went bust spectacularly. And so they're sort of recovering from that. He's a really nice guy. She's a real sourpuss. Maggie Smith, the great Maggie Smith, as a woman who's there because she needs a hip operation. Tom Wilkinson, one of my favorite actors. He's a former high court judge. Celia Imrie, also a lesser known name, playing sort of an aging gold digger. And then there's a guy named Ronald Pickup, who is kind of the last on this list. And I wanted to sort of take a moment to mention him because he's so good in this movie. And I don't think anyone really knows who he is in America. He had a long career in England. He was actually part of Laurence Olivier's theater troupe, which kind of shows you how far back he goes. Ooh. And he plays a guy named Norman Cousins, who is this aging Casanova, you know, seen better days, a little rumpled and greasy, but he's still got charm and he's still got moves, and you can't take that away from him. And I think he's like the best character and what's one of the best performances in this movie. Anyway, here is a clip.
Come and spend your autumn years in an Indian palace.
This is the day.
It's a luxury development where all the residents are in their golden years.
Like the coast of Florida?
Yeah, but with more elephants.
Flight 247 to Delhi is boarding now.
Is this your first time in India?
Yes. Do you think we'll be all right?
It's going to be extraordinary.
Welcome to the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
Prepare to be amazed.
Just makes me want to retire, Reaper. Let's go there and retire.
Kristen, you are...
Grab Anne, I'll grab Dean. Let's retire at the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
My
Let's
God,
do it.
You're so, I'm jealous. I'm jealous of this positive attitude of yours toward retirement. I'm scared to death of it myself. But listen, I understand. It's good that you're going in with a positive attitude. And I do think that's one of the things I like about this movie. You know, there, There is something a tiny bit problematic about the movie. Did you find that when you were watching it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm like, right? Look at all these white people going to India to be saved.
I know.
Look at the wisdom they're going to glean from the Indians. Or are they really going to be teaching the Indians something?
Right.
Oh, yeah. There's lots of problems. I'm not saying it's a perfect movie. And it does make me itchy occasionally.
Yes. That's a very good way of putting it. But, you know, you do have this movie that, again, the acting is really lovely. And the characters are I think, pretty nicely written. And they're all very strong, believable characters. So, yeah, it's a bit of a soap opera. But it's about all these people in post-retirement looking to make a change. You know, some of them want to change. Some of them are forced to change. Some of them are, I guess you'd say, kind of compelled to change by something inside them. You know, and here's a whole new chapter of life for everyone involved, and things don't go the way they expect, and they are off on this adventure. In a lot of ways, I think it's a very corny, very sugary movie, but it's also very sweet, and it's very upbeat, I think. It's an extremely light lift, and it's about, you know, people taking a chance and seeing what happens after a certain age. And so I thought maybe that might give our listeners some ideas.
Oh, I think that's a great recommendation, Rafer. And it's also just a very pretty film. I want to point out how pretty the movie is.
Yeah.
It's beautiful to look at.
Yeah, beautiful colors in that film. You're right. You're right. Okay, so Kristen, what about you? Yours is not about a retirement home.
No. Well, not exactly. It's about a house where four women live together.
Yes.
And every time I watch them, I say, thank you for being a friend. That's right. I am talking about the Golden Girls, which, by the way, I am shocked I have not prescribed on this show yet because
I'm shocked.
I talk about the Golden Girls all the time, but I looked back on our prescription pad. We've yet to prescribe the Golden Girls. It ran from 1985 to 1992. It is one of the greatest shows of all time. Snappiest writing. It still holds up. Anytime I watch it, I'm like, man, that's very clever. Or every once in a while, I even think, how did that air on prime time? That is a little too racy. They have a lot of...
Yeah, they do get a little racy on Golden Girls, yeah.
Oh, yeah. A lot of sex jokes. A lot of things that, as a little kid, it went over my head. And now as an adult, I'm like, did they really just imply that? What? Anywho, I'm sure everybody knows what the show is. But if you don't, The Golden Girls centers on four older gals living together in Miami and experiencing the joys, the ups, the downs, everything of their golden years. We have, of course, the very strong-willed Dorothy, played by Bea Arthur. We have the naive and optimistic Rose Nyland, played by Betty White. We have the very sultry, sexy Blanche, played by Rue McClanahan. She's a Southern belle who loves men. And, of course, we have the matriarch of the group, Dorothy's mother, Sophia Petrillo, played by Estelle Getty. And then there's a rotating cast of men who come in and out of their lives because they're constantly having affairs. And then neighbors, people that they meet at their various jobs, their volunteer work, the other things that they do in life. And throughout it all, as I said, they remain friends. Here's a clip.
The man of Blanche's boudoir. It's a calendar. Each month has the picture of a man who's brought some special joy into my life.
Oh, Blanche, oh, honey, this is so thoughtful. Rose!
September?
Yep.
I'm surprised you were able to walk in October.
You know, two things strike me about the Golden Girls. One is Bea Arthur was playing an older woman in the 70s and Maude. It's remarkable that she did that for so long, and she's great.
Oh yeah.
And then the other thing that I was thinking about while you were describing the show, which I was never a regular watcher of, but I would see it on television occasionally, and I always had to admit that the lines were very, very snappy and very funny. A lot of zingers in that show. But while you were describing it, I was thinking, this is basically Sex and the City, these four characters.
Yes.
Right?
You're not the first person to say that, Rafer. A lot of people when...
I'm sure I must not be.
Yeah. When Sex and the City launched, there were quite a few people who said, this is just ripping off the Golden Girls. Excuse me.
I love it. It's pretty funny. I don't remember that, but it only occurred to me just now. Maybe I'm making an obvious statement there.
No. It's a good statement, though. I mean, but I will say this. In my opinion, I think the Golden Girls holds up better than Sex and the City. Because every once in a while I'll watch reruns of Sex and the City now and I'm like, I think they were trying to be pushing the envelope, but they're actually kind of offensive right here. Whereas The Golden Girls never really offends me. It's just like, this is hilarious writing.
Yeah, well, The Golden Girls was very, very, it seemed to me, it was very, very classic sitcom template.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it was really all of, it was all about the, not, I mean, it was about the characters, of course, but it really is about those zingers. It's about those, that, you know, set up and punchline. They're very good and very funny. And the oldest of the four.
Sophia, yes.
I mean, I do remember her just being, she was just fantastic.
Oh my gosh. She had the kinds of lines that would just destroy everybody around her. Like Dorothy was salty, but Sophia, whoa, she had humdingers.
Right.
They were humdingers. And the reason I'm prescribing the show, though, is not just because it's hilarious or good writing. It's because I think these four characters show so many different options of what you can do next if you want to. If you want to, you can keep working part-time while you decide what to do next, like Dorothy, who's a substitute teacher. You can be a volunteer like Rose. Rose does volunteer work. She occasionally works odd jobs. You can be like Sophia. She has all sorts of secret adventures. There's a whole episode of the show called The Secret Life of Sophia Petrillo, where you just see what she does when she's not with the girls. And it's wonderful to see that she has her own private life that's not involving her roommates at all. Or you can be like Blanche. You can become a swinger if you want to. Get up to all sorts of sexual adventures, you know?
Sure.
Yeah, you can do anything you want to. The world is your oyster right now. Nobody is relying on you. Nobody is expecting anything of you. Your boss is not going to call you tomorrow and wonder where you are. Your kids don't need you to come home at night at this point. So experiment. Have fun. Be like the girls on The Golden Girls. Laugh a lot. Eat some cheesecake. Sit on the lanai. Make some mistakes. Put on a show. Dress up as a chicken. Do all the things the girls do. They do it all.
You make it all sound so good, Kristen. Boy.
Oh my God, it's going to be so fun. I mean, I'm going to be like Dorothy, full disclosure. I don't think I'll ever stop working. I'll always work at least part-time.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, I'm going to do all that other fun stuff. Absolutely.
All right. Well, then I think we've got two pretty good recommendations. Kristen is recommending The Golden Girls, and I am recommending The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
All right, we're going to take another quick break, but before we do, thank you to everybody who's given us those 5 stars in Apple Podcasts, and thank you also to the people who've reviewed us. For example, that movie girl recently gave us 5 stars and wrote, "Their banter and friendship is a joy to listen to. Their amazing senses of humor keep me laughing, and their sincere care for their listeners and excellent suggestions keep me coming back."
Oh, thanks, That Movie Girl. I like that name.
Me too. I wonder if you're a fan of That Girl.
That's what I was thinking.
That TV show that I love so much.
Marlo Thomas. Yeah, I know. I was thinking the same thing.
So cute. Love it. Well, stay with us. When we're back, we have our weekly What Should I Watch Next letter. We are back with our What Should I Watch Next letter of the week. Rafer, take it away.
All right. This one comes from Diane. Diane says, "Dear Rafer and Kristen, I have a confession. Despite being a strong, independent woman in a relationship with a man I consider my equal, I have always been a sucker for lowbrow adult fairy tales about princes, millionaires, and celebrities falling in love with ordinary people. Blame COVID, but I've been watching more of this kind of content than ever before. Movies in this vein have included everything from Notting Hill to the Christmas Prince trilogy, and on TV, shows ranging from The Baker and the Beauty to The Bachelor. No, I'm not proud. I'm sure you know plenty of other movies and TV shows in this vein. What should I watch next?"
Oh, Diane, you're not alone in this. Hollywood has been making this story for as long as Hollywood has existed because people love the storyline. So no shame, no reason to be embarrassed. You say you're not proud. Go ahead and be proud. It's fine.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Just enjoy the fairy tale.
I completely agree.
Yeah. We all like fairy tales, right? To a certain extent.
I think that's exactly right. I don't know. I think that's why you go to the movies in a lot of ways. I mean, yes, you go to the movies to see, you know, dramas and to see, you know, have questions raised and to wrestle with topics. But I do think that a big appeal of the movies is you want to go see a fairy tale. You want to go put yourself in a situation that you aren't in and live it and do all the things that you would want to do and can't do. You know, for me, that's usually shooting people. That's why I like action movies, right? And that's, you know, that's what you, that's why you go to the movies. You want to see a movie. God, I wish I could shoot that guy. Yay, I can go to that movie, right? That guy that was...
You really need to see Psycho Sister-in-Law. Oh, my God.
Yeah, but it's, you know, fantasies. I think fantasies are great. I think it's all good. Yeah, and you know, I mean, these things sell. These things sell like wildfire, these kinds of movies, right? The Prince and the Princess fairy tale, God, it just never gets old.
Never gets old. And I got to take my hat off to you, Diane. That Christmas Prince trilogy, it just gets worse and worse with each movie. But yeah, of course I've seen them all multiple times. Of course I have.
Only you would know that, Kristen. I've never even heard of that.
Oh, God. You would hate it, Rafer. Don't watch it.
Christmas Prince. I love it.
It's the Princess Fantasy and Christmas movies all in one.
God, that's right. That's right. It's perfect for you. Boy, incredible.
So, Rafer, what are we going to prescribe Diane here?
Well, I'm going to go first because I think your choice is probably going to be better. I went back to a movie that I don't know. Diane has probably seen this, but it's, I'm going to throw it out there. I went back to the classic and sort of a movie that I consider the epitome of this genre, which is Pretty Woman from 1990.
Oh my gosh, Rafer, I just rewatched this a few weeks ago because I was on a romance podcast and they let me pick the movie.
Oh, okay.
And I picked this movie because I love it so much.
Yeah?
I love this movie. What's not to love? Julia Roberts? Has she ever been more delightful?
I know. Oh, God. Yeah, Pretty Woman. I haven't seen it in a long time, but I saw a little bit of it recently. You know, I was on a vacation with my kids, and there was a lot of TV on. And we were just kind of watching TV. And so we would and we had Turner Classic Movies as well, which we don't have here at home. And so we wound up kind of watching, running across movies sort of mid-movie the way you used to back when TV was more of a thing. And I came across a little bit of this recently, but I haven't like rewatched it. But anyway, this is the highly objectionable story of Vivian Ward. She's a prostitute walking the streets of Los Angeles. She's played by Julia Roberts, of course. And of course, Richard Gere plays Edward Lewis. He's a corporate raider, very 1980s thing to be. This was 1990, so we're still coming out of the 80s. It still feels like the 80s. He's fantastically wealthy. He's so wealthy, in fact, and so pampered that he can't even drive a stick shift. And that's how he ends up, what a coincidence, in the red light district of Hollywood. And he does what anyone would do. He hires the prostitute to drive him to his hotel. I don't think that excuse worked for Hugh Grant. I don't think it worked for Eddie Murphy when they got caught with a prostitute. But this is real. He just wanted her to drive his stick shift. So they get back to his hotel and they get along. You know, she's charming and funny and he's handsome and rich. Why wouldn't they get along? And I think that's the point where Vivian sets down her famous rules, right? She'll sleep with you, but she won't kiss on the lips because they're sex, of course. But Vivian's waiting for love. Kissing is for love. And it's not too long before Edward and Vivian are spending a lot of time together. They've got a little arrangement. He is paying her, but, you know, he also enjoys her company. He's taking her out to these nice hotels and these fancy restaurants, and, you know, she could kind of get used to this life. And here's a clip.
Yes, I'd like to hire you as an employee. Would you consider spending the week with me? I will pay you to be at my beck and call.
Look, I'd love to be your beck and call girl, but, you're a rich, good-looking guy. You could get a million girls free.
I want a professional. Don't need any romantic hassles this week.
If you're talking 24 hours a day, it's gonna cost you.
Oh, yes, of course. All right, here we go. Give me a ballpark figure. How much?
6 full nights, days to 4,000.
6 nights at 300 is 1,800.
You want days too?
2,000.
3,000.
Done.
Holy shit!
Ah, yes. Highly objectionable. So many things wrong with this. And yeah.
Yes.
You can't help but cheer for Julia Roberts in this. She seems like she's having a great time. And that's what makes this movie work, in my opinion, is that she seems delighted. She seems happy. She seems like she just won the lottery. She's smiling and laughing in every single scene. She's just a delight in this movie. And if anybody else were in it and didn't have her effervescence in it, I don't think this would have worked. It would have been not fun to watch. But she brings something to this movie that makes it just a joy. And it's hard not to cheer for her. It's hard not to think, yes, I want that pretty woman to get her prince. I want her to do whatever she wants.
That's totally right. That's totally right. One thing that's interesting to me about this movie is that it kind of has a similar history to Risky Business from, like, what, 1982 or 3? When was Risky Business? Earlier. But that's also one of my favorite movies of the 80s. They're both about prostitutes. That prostitute is a central character. And they were both supposed to be very dark. Pretty Woman actually started out as a drama about, like, sex workers and drug addiction in Los Angeles. And Risky Business is a dark movie. Like, it's a dark comedy, but the original ending was much more downbeat, much more of a downer. And the studio kind of brightened it up a little bit. But I always thought it was interesting that you had these two kind of iconic movies about sex workers that started out to be very downbeat, but wound up as, like, fun sexual fantasies in Hollywood. I just thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, and I do appreciate that they don't actually get punished in the end for being sex workers.
True.
And that's part of what makes them delightful, too, because I feel like there is a habit in Hollywood to punish women who do sex work.
That is true. And the other thing that's interesting is that I think Risky Business was really, 100% a male fantasy. But this is really a female fantasy, I think. I mean, you could say this is also a male fantasy. I know that people like to try to put a feminist spin on this movie, but I always just think, like, yeah, nice try. It's about a poor girl who gets whisked away by a handsome, rich guy. And I know there's that famous line in the movie where it's at the end, I don't think I'm spoiling anything. And Julie Roberts is talking about how when she was a kid, she always liked the idea of the prince on the white horse coming to rescue her. Mm-hmm. And Richard Gere says, so what happens after that? And Julie Roberts says, she rescues him right back. And I just thought, like, yeah, that's just not enough to make this a feminist film, in my opinion. And Julia Roberts can barely get that line out. It's like, she knows it's bullshit. Like, when you see the movie, she's trying to say that with a straight face. She can't do it. But I still get a kick out of this movie, I think, because it's so unashamed, right? It's like, well, guys want a sexual plaything and women want a rich guy, and here's a movie about that. And they all lived happily ever after, the end. And so it's a lot of fun, I think.
Yeah, and they do actually have really fantastic chemistry.
One last thing, Kristen. Have you ever seen the website that's called 1 Minute Screenplays?
No.
Or maybe it's called Movie a Minute, but they condense movies down into 1 minute. 1 minute screenplays. There's usually only about three or four lines. And Pretty Woman was this. Julia Roberts, I'm a prostitute, but I won't kiss on the lips. Richard Gere, I'm a millionaire. Julia Roberts, parentheses, smooch. And that was it. So they do that with all kinds of movies in there. And they're actually pretty funny and pretty good if you can find it. I think it's called Movie a Minute.
Oh my gosh, that's so
funny.
Anyway. I'll have to check that out.
Kristen, what about you? What are you going to recommend? This is totally your bailiwick right here, this question.
Oh, I love the use of the term bailiwick. Nice. Yes, and it is.
Thank you.
So I am choosing a very new series, which was on the BBC and is currently on HBO Max. It's called Starstruck. Do you know this TV show, Rafer?
Not at all. When I think Starstruck, I think of the old movie.
Of course. So Starstruck is, I think, only 5 or 6 episodes, and it centers on Jessie, a New Zealander living in the UK, played by the hilarious comedian Rose Matafeo. Apologies if I'm pronouncing her last name wrong. She's Polynesian. I'm pronouncing it possibly right, possibly wrong. Anywho, she works a lot of odd jobs. She shares a flat with her best friend, Kate. She has lots of fun with various guys, one night stands, friends with benefits, and so on. And then, after a wild New Year's Eve, she realizes that one of those guys, Tom, is a famous film star. Their worlds could not be more different, yet they can't resist each other. It's like animal attraction. Here's a clip.
When people see us together, it's like one of those, weird animal friendship shows where you see a Labrador and a hedgehog who are friends and everyone's like, oh, that's not right, that's weird, but okay, if it works for them, great.
People don't think that.
Obviously, you would say that you're the fucking Labrador.
You are genuinely the most stressful person I've ever met.
My darling, when our 20s are outrageous, you're better than a damn movie star and toss them aside like a plaything.
I don't know if you know this, but you are incredibly famous.
Thank you.
That wasn't a compliment.
It's like fan fiction, but it's real.
I'm not a fan, so.
Well, it sounds like you were a fan.
Of his day.
Isn't this the premise of Notting Hill?
Kind of, only it's the other way around.
Okay.
He's the famous film star, not her.
Okay.
See, very different.
I'm sorry I even brought it up.
Very different. And I also just want to point out more ethnically diverse. Tom is British, but he's South Asian. And Rose, she's a Kiwi, but she's Polynesian. And so these are people that we get to see in this kind of romance who we don't always get to see in this kind of romance, right? And so that's a little bit of an added bonus there. But more than anything, I just think that people should watch the show because whatever comes out of their mouth is not the thing you think they're going to say ever. And it just keeps you on your toes watching it. Like, you think she's about to compliment him, but that's not a compliment. Hold on. I think she just insulted him. I don't know. Whatever comes out of their mouth, you just have no idea. And it's always so funny. It's just the most hilarious show. So watch it for the romance. Watch it for the ridiculous fantasy. But also just watch it for the outstanding writing. You'll be surprised every single line. Every single line, you'll want to pause it and just like rewind it and say, that sentence did not end where I thought it was going to end.
That's very funny. Is the show, you said it, oh, she's a New Zealander, but it takes place in the UK. Is it a New Zealand show or is it a British show?
It's a British show. It's a BBC show.
But she's a New Zealander.
Yes. Yeah, so she's a New Zealander. And there is a certain point where she is about to move back to New Zealand. And spoiler alert, Tom reappears at that point. Will they end up together? I can't say. I'm not going to say. Not going to give it away, Rafer.
I love it. I wonder if that's that particular kind of humor that you're describing, I wonder if that's a New Zealand thing. Do you know what I mean? Like Taika Waititi and...
Oh, he does it too. I just think he's so clever.
I wonder.
He's so clever.
Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah, and Flight of the Conchords do it in their songs all the time too.
Yeah, exactly. I just wonder if that's a national trait or something, you know?
It might be.
All right, cool. I'll check that out. And I know I always ask you this. Kid-friendly? Sounds like maybe not.
There's some sex in it, and I don't know how you feel about your kids watching the kind of sex that's in this.
Okay. All right. I'll think about it. Maybe I'll...
Yeah, I know everyone has a different threshold of what kind of sex they're okay with their kids seeing. Yeah.
Indeed.
So,
all right. I'll give it a preview, but that sounds really good.
Oh, it's so fun, Rafer. It's so fun. Such great writing. So once again, those recommendations are from Rafer, the classic Pretty Woman, which is now at this point over 30 years old, and the much more recent Starstruck from 2021 on HBO Max.
Well, Kristen, and that is it for this week's episode of Movie Therapy.
Oh my gosh, it is time to find a psycho sister-in-law, go into that pool house, and just relax, right?
Don't go into the pool house. No. Thank you to everyone who wrote in. We always appreciate it.
And thanks also to the Airwave Media Podcast Network, which we're proudly a part of. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to their other fine shows like Food with Mark Bittman and Ben Franklin's World.
Until next time, I'm Rafer Guzman.
And I'm Kristen Meinzer.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye-bye.